On this episode of the Wrestling Brethren podcast, we talk Roman Reigns, WWE attendance figures, AEW versus WWE, and much more. AOJ Will, get us started.
What up? This is Josiah Williams, and you're listening to the Wrestling Brethren podcast, where wrestling and pop culture collide. Yeah.
To the Wrestling Brethren podcast. This is Josh Wiener, your host. We are on episode 257. With me tonight are Seth Zillman and Jared Aubrey. Fellas, how the hell are you?
Well, I heard something important's happening tomorrow in the world of wrestling, but I think it slipped my mind as far as what it might be. I guess I'll have to check my record books or something.
Is this the event that we travel forward in time so we miss the event?
Well, we're making it the main event of our news items. So let's kick things off with the wrestling news of the week. So we're starting off with a topic that was requested by Jarrett himself, and he wanted to make sure after I told him this news tidbit that he wanted it on the show to be discussed. So there was a report about how Roman Reigns is perceived backstage, and company officials are reportedly very happy with WWE Universal Champion Roman Reigns' work as a heel. A new report notes that Reigns is currently the top merchandise seller for WWE, according to Wrestling News. The Tribal Chief is said to be the all-time merchandise mover among top heel wrestlers in WWE history. It was noted that Reigns' merchandise sales are at the level of John Cena, and that is a more impressive accomplishment because Cena sold a ton of merchandise as a babyface, while Reigns is supposed to be a despised heel. On a related note, it's rumored that Reigns will hold the Universal title for a long time and that there are no plans for him to drop the title this calendar year.
I think also what's worth mentioning, if we're talking about moving merchandise to the level of Cena, I mean, is that comparative to a couple years back when a lot more people were watching the show and a lot more people were attending events? Or is it comparative to what Cena might still be selling, even though he's a part-timer? Either way, I mean, it's definitely good news. And of course, I love Roman as much as the next guy. Sooner or later, heels do have to be beaten. And it'll be interesting to see if they're able to do what people think they're going to do, which is get The Rock for Mania. And if they can't get The Rock, where do they go from there?
Well, as the big Roman fan, this is nothing but good news to me. I think we've gone on so often here about how we're in love with the Tribal Chief storyline, and this, I definitely acknowledge my Tribal Chief. You two better step up and do the same, or else you will not be brought onto the island of relevancy.
Excuse you. I believe I've professed my devotion several times over.
I had to throw that in. Come on. So yeah, I don't know. It's great news that he's moving that much merch. Like, especially, maybe I'm part of that. I think I've bought 4 shirts in the last month and a half. So happy to contribute to the Tribal Chief's goodness. But he's killing it as a heel. Like, let's be honest. He's doing probably the best work of his career, and it's showing. And as far as the title goes, I'm still not 100% convinced that The Rock is going to be the one to beat him. The Rock does not need to end that title reign. It needs to be somebody on the roster, preferably not somebody that's super established. This is where we go back to when we booked, how do we end Roman's quote pun reign is, this is where we need to be building somebody up to be relevant and to finally take the title. It should not be The Rock when he's only going to be around for once a year. Opportunity to build a new star here, folks. And I'm glad that Roman's going to be setting records with this title reign. I'm very, very happy.
Well, now, I read something that they were hoping to get The Rock for an appearance at Survivor Series this year because it's the 25th anniversary of his debut at Survivor Series. But now they're saying that that may not happen because he'll be in Australia filming season 2 of Young Rock. But, you know, there are these things called airplanes, so who knows. But they're also saying that they may not be able to get Rock for Mania 38 in Dallas, but a lot of people are pushing it for 39 in Los Angeles. And if they stretch this out to another year, man, they better peel back some more layers, because I don't want this to get boring. They've hooked me so far, but right now, recently, they've just done more of the end game bosses, like the end level bosses, and less storytelling. After, let's assume he beats Brock at, you know, that show that we won't be discussing. That's another boss that he beats, but we need to get back to storytelling at that time. And it may be difficult with Survivor Series around the corner where it's, you know, brand champion versus brand champion, which so boring and so lazy. But, you know, I think we need to fill the time with more storytelling, more layer peeling, more seed planting. So, yeah, I think that's where we're at with this.
I wonder if we're getting the boss level folks now to take us through the event. Geez, I can't even speak. The event that shall not be named, to get the new rosters into effect. And then we'll have some different folks he can bring onto the Island of Relevancy and then swiftly defeat.
I think the reason why so many people think it would be The Rock is because it's the whole tribal chief, you know, head of the family and all that. And obviously most people know probably that he's The Rock's cousin. So if they aren't going to go that route, then I guess I suppose they could have one of the Usos break away. Or there's always the option. I mean, if they're not going to go the route, and if he still maintains his popularity, I might as well just turn him babyface and just make him a dragon slayer. That usually tends to be how WWE booked their champions traditionally anyway. You know, the top champion was a babyface.
I mentioned that after, was it Josh, last week's SmackDown? I'm like, is Roman getting pops? Now, like before, you know, even let's say 2 months ago, it was 97.219% boos from the crowd. I'm starting to hear loud pockets of cheers when Roman makes an entrance. And I wonder, you know, is this the time now that finally, you know, without WWE cramming him down our throats like Super Cena 2.0, if this happens organically, like how huge of a face he could be as this, right? Don't know. I don't know how they would play that within the whole tribal chief thing. And the other option, if he faces Rock at Mania, I mean, Josh laid out a brilliant storyline to help Roman win this match. And I don't know, Josh, if you want to explain it or not again.
Well, I mean, I talk about layers and everything and telling more story. We have said that obviously Naomi is Jimmy's wife. Obviously she's not related by blood in the bloodline, but she could be added as a tertiary story piece. She's facing Sonya Deville tomorrow in her in-ring return and Naomi's in-ring return because she's been kept off TV. So that if she's pulled into that, into the bloodline, then she becomes like a tertiary piece, which is fine. That's needed for storytelling, depth, layers. But you have two people in, I can't even say NXT 2.0 because they're not on TV, but in developmental, like the Performance Center, you have another brother of the Usos, and you still have Simone Johnson, who is The Rock's daughter. Now, before they signed the other Uso brother, my story arc was getting Simone involved, obviously siding with her dad, but at some point in time turning on him, whether it be at the Mania match or on the road to WrestleMania or whatever. But now that they have that other Uso brother, wouldn't it make sense, storyline-wise, to have them start a romance? Although, I don't know if technically that's dating a cousin, or I'm not sure how that would work.
We're going into a whole weird area here.
I have to follow the family tree and see if that's even legal. But if it's not, you could have her mentor him, or not mentor, but like manage him, or some. There's a lot of pieces in play that I still haven't even been touched upon yet. So lots of things can be intertwined into this. Part of what was good about Roman's feuds with Kevin Owens and Cesaro is that it didn't feel like the one and done that the high-level end bosses were. Edge, Brock, Finn. You know, they just seemed to be like a one and done, whereas Kevin Owens had multiple title shots because he was screwed out of so many of them by Roman and his cheating ways. And Cesaro got, I think, two opportunities, one on television, one on a pay-per-view. So if they get back into not necessarily repeat matchups all the time, I don't want it to feel like Raw, and SmackDown's done a good job of making it not feel like repeats all the time. It just felt more deserved because the babyface would get screwed so much that you wanted to see them get another turn and be treated justly. So they have, and now with the draft and the new rosters, they have more challengers, as Jared mentioned. More challengers. They didn't bring Roman to Raw. They brought the new challengers to SmackDown. Obviously, Drew is probably going to be in line first, and he kind of is in between like the mid-card challenger and the end boss challenge. So, you know, something to keep an eye on and how they tread with that storytelling.
Ricochet versus Roman Reigns.
Oh, man. And if I can't beat you, I'll turn into Prince Puma. No. and then face a lawsuit from Lucha Underground.
Yeah, no kidding.
All right. Any last thoughts on this Roman Reigns news before we move on to our next item?
No, nothing really.
Let's just move forward.
All righty. The next item is that there is a problem within the WWE's women's divisions on Raw and SmackDown. You know, they have the King of the Ring tournament and they have the Queen's Crown tournament, and over four matches to date, the Queen's Crown has barely reached 8 minutes of total in-ring time. In comparison, the King of the Ring tournament has pushed past 37 minutes, which means the men have gotten over four times as much opportunity to work in an equivalent situation. And as an example, I timed myself Shayna Baszler versus Dana Brooke on Raw, and it lasted 1 minute and 27 seconds. It's unreal to me how you expect anybody to get over, let alone go over, in less than 2 minutes. We're back to the point of before the hashtag of give divas a chance. Now we need to, I guess, start a new one of give women a chance, because this is nuts. This is like Bella's level territory of time.
Yeah, it is pretty hilarious because they broke up all the women's tag teams, it seems. And this supposedly prestigious tournaments have the same women that we've been seeing wrestle each other all the other weeks. So it's just as a tournament, but we got the same people, and thus it really doesn't feel any different. Now, to be fair, I mean, like you said, with the even though the men's matches are getting longer, I'm not sure there's anybody in the lineup that we're like, chomping at the bit to see win it. I mean, Xavier Woods has got an online following for this. There's a lot of, I think there are definitely a good number of fans that want to see Woods win. And it'd be interesting to see what happens the new day after that. But it's like, I don't know of anybody that is truly watching with anticipation this Queen's Crown tournament. And like I said before, I'm a sucker for tournaments. I like tournaments. So but I guess just kind of by nature, I have an interest in it. But I don't know anybody that actually does that, like, is truly saying, oh, man, I can't wait to see who's going to win this or who's even going to make it to the finals.
I can forgive part of this and just a small part of this. If WWE is trying to reestablish Shayna as a legit badass, then having her beat somebody like Dana Brooke in a minute and 47 seconds, whatever it was, is okay. She's going to probably need to do that week in and week out to get back over as a legit badass after being treated the way she has been on TV lately. Now, for the rest of it, I completely agree. Well, this is back to the 90s divas, you know, come out and, you know, get a couple minutes in, you know, wiggling things and then get back off of TV again. And that's not what it's supposed to be like these days, not only from, if you want to go down the road of the equality perspective, or if you want to just listen to what we say on the show over and over and over again, is that you cannot get somebody over if they get 30 seconds on TV. You need to give us time to get invested in those people. And you can't do that in a couple of minutes in a match. So why would I even want to watch that if I know that, oh, this match is going to last 5 minutes. I'm going to learn nothing. I'm barely going to get entertained. The entrances will just be over, and then the match is going to be over. So there's no reason for me to watch, even if it is supposed to be this prestigious tournament.
Not only is there a problem with the time, but also booking. You had Liv Morgan versus Carmella for the 17th time, and Carmella went over, and then comes reports that, oh, Liv was supposed to win, but they changed their mind at the last minute. Why? I thought we were trying to build up Liv Morgan. Why? Ugh. And so now that leads to a heel versus heel matchup in the semifinals. Carmella versus Zelina Vega. Why would I want to see that? And then in the men's side, you had the opportunity to do Kofi Kingston versus Xavier Woods to see how that would play out. And you passed on it to do Jinder Mahal.
I got nothing.
Well, I think you nailed that one point, Josh. Is like, why do I want to be excited for a match with Selena, whatever, Jesus, I can't speak today, Vega in a match where, again, she's only been on TV for a few minutes at a time. It's like, how am I supposed to believe in her as a credible contender for anything if, you know, there's no time spent getting invested in there? So, and that goes for whoever she's wrestling as well. It's just, it's no fun. And, you know, when they do have a match, it's, you know, they're mostly won by the most devastating move in professional wrestling. So how are you getting anybody over that way?
That's how Doudrop beat Natalya in less than 3 minutes.
Well, again, this is Doudrop and Natalya.
Yeah, but doesn't have to be. They all have finishers. We don't need a roll-up, but whatever.
Back to your point on booking, sir.
Yep. All right. Well, speaking of booking, there is a residual effect to crappy booking, and that's attendance. So Raw's attendance numbers have been released since returning fans to the buildings, and that started back in July on the 19th in Dallas. And in the subsequent weeks since, they've only had one show over 10,000 people, and that was August 2nd in Chicago, you're welcome, where they had 12,629 fans. And I can tell you from personal experience, that felt like it was a sellout because that was a crazy crowd. But in Dallas on July 19th, when everything returned, it was 9,189. July 26th in Kansas City, 7,000 plus. August 9th in Orlando, 8,000 plus. August 16th in San Antonio, 7,900. August 23rd, San Diego, 5,900. All the way down to October 11th, which was this past Monday in San Francisco, in an arena that holds 18,000 fans for basketball, the attendance for Raw was 4,031. Now, it's noted that the estimated setup and capacity for Raw was 4,208. So, they don't really say in this article, and I don't know, but either they're setting up only a percentage of these buildings for seating because of the pandemic, or that they're just not selling tickets and so they're trying to section it off so it kind of looks better on TV. I don't know what the case is, but this past Monday was the lowest paid attendance since they've returned to having fans in the crowd.
That was my understanding about the attendance, is that they had it set up for something like 4,000 or 5,000 people. So they basically had half the arena blocked off, because if they were selling more and more tickets, they can always just open up more seats, move things a little bit farther back. Because I think I want to say that's what they did for All Out at Now Arena, because it looked like the stage was moved back a little bit for the pay-per-view, because they had 11,000 people at the pay-per-view and like 5,000 or 6,000 at the TV tapings. So that also goes to show that they were probably expecting, probably based on initial pre-sales or whatever, they weren't expecting that many. So they just set the building up to effectively half capacity. And then when, I don't know if you were going to go over AEW numbers as well, it's just like apparently AEW was outsold Raw and SmackDown for ticket sales in the month of September. I don't know how October is going to work out, but it's one of the things that I've been saying, and I'm going to sound like a mark here. Some people are going to think, oh, here's Xandrax going on about AEW again. But when you talk about a product getting hot, ratings are like the last thing to go up. You get attendance, pay-per-view buys, merch, stuff like that goes up before ratings get any major boost. That's kind of what's been happening with them. I mean, with all the tickets they've been selling. So we'll see if it keeps up. I mean, it's always best for multiple promotions to have a good product. That's what's best for the fans, and I think that's what's best for business, essentially. And I think WWE really needs a creative overhaul in what they do.
I don't know what WWE would expect for news of this and these attendance numbers. Again, we've been talking on the show for so long that Raw is no fun. Raw is no good, especially compared to SmackDown. When you continually provide a product that is not good or not fun to a lot of people, then they stop showing up and they stop opening their wallets. And especially for some of the ticket prices, especially Raw, they're much more expensive for prime seats than they are for others. I know I paid a hefty price for mine when I went last year before the pandemic started. People aren't going to do that if they're not going to enjoy the show or not going to enjoy what's going on. I don't blame them. Like, I don't watch TV. I don't watch the show on TV. So why am I going to go watch a live event if I think it's going to suck? So, completely, completely believable.
Completely believable. We are not making up these shitty numbers, folks. All right. Well, next, I wanted to mention that next week, next Saturday, October 23rd, Impact Wrestling presents Bound for Glory from Las Vegas. And no, it will not be added to our predictions contest or game, but it does appear to be a great card that is shaping up. And one thing that is throwing me off, that it's starting at 9:30 Central Time with an 8:30 pre-show. I understand it's in Vegas and they're 2 hours ahead behind in time zones, but 9:30 for a pay-per-view? I'm having flashbacks to when I was a kid and would tape Saturday night's main event because I wasn't allowed to stay up that late and watch it Sunday morning. 9:30 for
I think that would be about the title, the ending.
Right? Ugh. I don't know what I'm going to do. I mean, thankfully it's a Saturday. I can sleep in Sunday, but good grief. One of the things that has piqued my interest is we've been told that the Inspiration have signed with Impact Wrestling. They will debut at Bound for Glory, and how they debut is that they get a title shot for the women's tag team titles against their current champions of Decay, who is Havoc and Rosemary. And if you don't know who the Inspiration are, you've been living under a rock, or you don't listen to this show, because the Inspiration are formerly known as the Iconics. So Cassie Lee and Jessica McKay will be now henceforth known as the Inspiration.
Well, if they want to shake the reputation of catering to ex-WWE talent, that's certainly not the way to do it. I mean, I can certainly see signing them because they have their times and they were entertaining, but I don't know about giving them essentially title shots right off the bat. Now, granted, I haven't been following Impact very closely for a number of years just because New Japan's been able to scratch my wrestling itch so much better. So I don't know how deep their Knockouts tag team division is, but still, it's that's that exact type of thing that makes people critical of Impact and say that they cater to ex-WWE talent. I don't know. We'll see how it goes. I mean, maybe they'll show sides to themselves in the ring that they didn't show in WWE. Maybe they were a lot better than they were allowed to be. You know, we'll see.
I really hope that's the case, Seth. We know that at least Cassie can do so much more. We saw when she had that singles match before she was summarily dismissed from WWE. We know what she can go when she's given the opportunity, and I hope Billy Kay's the same way as well. I think if they go back to their aggressive streak when they were heels, I think that's going to be a lot more entertaining than the comedy bits, which I enjoyed when it started, but it kind of went on a little bit too long. I would like to see them kind of just being nasty heels that are just vicious and aggressive, and maybe throw a little bit of the fun stuff in now and then. But yeah, let's just let them go for it. Let them be different.
And in my opinion, let them be the Impact Knockouts tag team champions, because as I told Jarrett when they signed, that's probably how negotiations went. I don't know if Scott D'Amore heads that up, but whoever it was, the representative for Impact. So, ladies, what can we do to prevent you from signing with AEW? Tag team title shot at the pay-per-view? All right, well, we'll see you in Vegas. Other than the women's tag team title match, you have the Impact World title being defended by Christian Cage against challenger Josh Alexander, who was the X Division champion and cashed in his option C opportunity. So they will also be crowning a new X Division champion due to the title being vacated. And they will also be crowning the inaugural digital media champion, which can be won by a male or a female. They do have Jordynne Grace in this fatal six-way or five-way or something, so I would not be surprised if she wins this title.
That doesn't really sound like a wrestling title, digital media champion. I guess that's their way of trying to be like a internet champion or 21st century streaming media champion or something like that. So I don't really know what to think of this yet. So I guess I've said it a couple times already, but wait and see.
And that's the first I've heard of it. And I heard it and I'm like, digital media champion. It's not like that really rings or rolls off the tongue, right? It's like digital media champion. You mean the DM champ? I don't know. That's a really funny name. Pass?
DM champion. I see what you did there. Let me slide into this title picture. I don't know about the name, and I don't know about the division. It's mostly these tournament matches were on Impact Plus, which is their online streaming service. I don't know about the title name or the title division, but the belt is pretty cool looking. It's kind of a unique look. Moving on to the main event, so to speak, of our news items. And that is the uniqueness, well, sort of uniqueness, of the next chapter of the AEW versus WWE quote-unquote war. And something weird is happening tomorrow as we record this, Friday, October 15th. We have a weird anomaly of Rampage versus SmackDown. Now, normally, under normal circumstances, SmackDown airs from 7 to 9 p.m. Central Standard Time. Rampage airs immediately afterwards from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. But this week, because baseball is on Fox, SmackDown had to move to Fox Sports 1. And so they've announced Super SmackDown, which is going to be an extra 30 minutes. So in other words, it will run until 9:30 p.m. Central Time. So that is bleeding into the first half hour of Rampage. And so Tony Khan took note of this and has countered by having a Rampage buy-in show free on YouTube. Now, buy-ins are normally the kickoff show to their pay-per-views, but they're having a buy-in show on YouTube 1 hour ahead of the start of Rampage. So this will start at 8 p.m. Central Time into the start of the second half of what is normally the SmackDown window. And I'm just going to give you the three announced matches for the Rampage buy-in that you can see on YouTube instead of watching SmackDown if you so desire. They have announced a women's match of Ty Conti versus Santana Garrett. They have announced Bobby Fish versus Lee Moriarty. And in the main event of a previously non-existent segment of a free YouTube show, we are getting Bryan Danielson versus Minoru Suzuki. What? Are you kidding me? Wow. And then
I pretty much said the same thing, but with a few other colorful words thrown in.
And then on Rampage proper, the main regular show, we're getting CM Punk versus Matt Sydal, Ruby Soho versus The Bunny, and in what will likely be the main event, a six-man tag of Chris Jericho, Jake Hager, and Sammy Guevara versus Ethan Page, Scorpio Sky, and the debuting former UFC heavyweight champion Junior Dos Santos in the main event.
Oh, dear that, God.
That is nuts. And then, if all of that wasn't enough, there was an interview that Tony Khan had with the New York Post because SmackDown announced, or I should say WWE announced, that the 30-minute overrun will feature no commercials. So in other words, they're trying to get you to stay on SmackDown and not flip over to Rampage in the commercials. So the New York Post, who was interviewing Tony Khan, actually asked him about that. And his response was, and I quote, "I've coined a phrase which is WYW, watch your wrestling. Whatever people want to watch, I want them to watch it. Unfortunately, if we are on at the same time, it's harder for people to watch their wrestling, at least live. We can take commercials out of it. If you want to take the commercials out of it, I can do that too. It doesn't seem very civil, but I have more money than they do, so I can afford to do that longer than they can. But that's how we make money at the end of the day, so I was surprised when they took those commercials out. The key point to that quote is, I have more money than they do. So Tony Khan puts his balls out on the line and says, I have more money than Vince McMahon. Wow. This escalated quickly.
Oh my God.
Yeah, that is one of those things I can't help but think behind closed doors Vince probably chuckled at. I mean, obviously no for sure, but it's like, I've heard that, you know, if you show, you know, balls, like we just said, that Vince respects that. And I will say this, some of the feedback to Tony Khan making these remarks, and basically how his response to SmackDown going head to head with Rampage for a half hour, he basically said, oh, well, you know, I can't wait to finally beat you guys. I'm, you know, one of your top shows. I forget it. It's paraphrased what the tweet said. And, I saw post after post on social media, you know, talking about, oh, see, here's just another example. WWE just Tony Khan just letting WWE live rent free in his head, and which is not a proper use of the term, but, and then they're saying, you know, he needs to focus on his own product. He needs to stop worrying about WWE. And I made this post in response several times saying, only in the internet can WWE actively put programming on opposite AEW. And somehow the reaction is, well, Tony Khan has to stop thinking about the competition. And Vince is the one actually taking action against the competition. You know, look at who's actually doing what. Tony made those remarks after WWE decided to go head to head with them with SmackDown. So if he did anything else, if he ignored it, or if he acknowledged that, yeah, we're probably going to lose head to head, both of those are weak options. So instead, he did the alpha male thing and just kind of said, bring it on. So it'll be interesting. I mean, my gut tells me that SmackDown will probably win in both the viewership and in the demo. But it's going to be closer than people think. I mean, Dynamite has been scoring demos comparable to Raw in some cases, in some weeks. And, of course, they'll be cutting into each other effectively. And it is on FS1, so it's not going to be the 2 million, 2.3 million crowd that they're going to have on Fox. This is going to be a reduced viewership show just based on the fact that it's on cable. But this is definitely the most interesting night of television for wrestling fans, probably since Dynamite debuted and WWE had the NXT 1.0 or 1.5 or whatever they were up to when they went to USA. So I retweeted something Denise Salcedo put out there, which is, I really don't care who's winning the war. All I care is that I want to watch some good wrestling no matter what's on. What we've gathered, what we've all heard, the people at TNT and TBS, they're very happy with AEW's performance. So as long as TNT and TBS are happy, they're literally the only opinions that matter as far as AEW's ratings. So it looks like AEW is going to be around for a while, even if they do lose. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I kind of agree there, Seth. I don't know that I'm interested in a full-on whatever night war at this point, but I do like Tony Khan hanging his balls out there and going, you know, I'm ready to fight. Right. And this is awesome because we talked about, you know, a couple weeks ago about how we feel that, or at least I did anyway, but how AEW is fun. It's different. It's challenging. They're pushing the edge. And that's something that WWE hasn't done for a long time. And it's starting to show in both attendance for WWE and in ratings. And for me, AEW is just the more fun show right now, and I would tend to watch it. Like Tony says, you know, watch your wrestling, watch whatever you enjoy and what you like and who you want to support. That's totally fine. I find myself just gravitating to AEW, like even with SmackDown, which is the far better show than Raw at this point. I'm still fast forwarding a lot of it to watch Roman and a couple other people that I enjoy watching. I'm not watching all of SmackDown, but I'm almost glued to all of AEW when I watch. So, I know what goes on. I think I'm kind of in the middle of, the casual smart fan or whatever, but, people like me are turning to AEW, and that should kind of speak things to WWE at this point.
I think Rampage has a very good chance of at least hanging with SmackDown tomorrow, because I have a feeling a lot of people don't realize it's on Fox Sports 1, or have forgotten, or have not checked their DVRs, because I just happened to notice by accident that my DVR was not set to record SmackDown on Friday, because the one that's set to record is on Fox, and it's not on this Friday on Fox, so my DVR wasn't going to record anything. So I had to manually go to FS1 and set that to record. So there's going to be probably a good chunk of the population that goes to Fox, says, where's SmackDown? Wait, there's a baseball game on in the playoffs. I'll just sit and watch that. So that will take away, obviously, viewers from both shows, but I would not be surprised if Rampage either closes the gap, comparatively speaking, or maybe even is, because of all this back and forth, the AEW fans are now just going to purposely sit and tune in to make the number go higher. Obviously for those who are set up with the ratings devices attached to their TVs, because that's how ratings work. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see not only the matches that have been set forth, but how the numbers pan out when they're announced over the weekend or on Monday.
Something I just thought of too, what's the availability of FS1? Is it a premium kind of channel, or is it as widespread as Fox proper?
I want to say it's like a mid-level.
Yeah. I think a lot of packages do have it. Fox proper, though, is, of course, at least in the States, over the air. It is, if you have a TV, you can probably get it. You don't need cable to get it. It's one of the five major networks. And so there are going to be people who might not even be able to watch the show on FS1 because they don't have cable or satellite or whatever they need. Because that's one of the reasons why, when people talk about, SmackDown gets better ratings than Dynamite, and I'm like, well, I would hope so. It's on free TV as opposed to cable. It's just got more coverage just by that. So it's that's something important to consider when we talk about ratings and how much SmackDown goes down. One other thing I'll say about Suzuki, though, because I think we all saw him come out at All Out. I know some of the people are saying, and I think I can understand why they're saying this, is like, well, this is hot-shotting a match. And I'm like, well, okay, if you want to call it that, I'm not going to argue against that. But this is Minoru Suzuki. Do you really need an angle to sell Bryan Danielson versus Minoru Suzuki? All you need is for Minoru Suzuki to walk out. There's your build. That's all you need to have, as far as I'm concerned. It is going to be a very interesting match, and I'm pretty sure we're going to get a finish, because AEW doesn't tend to do the screw job DQ stuff. So it would. I don't know how much longer Suzuki's going to be in the States, but I would think if he's going to be heading back to Japan pretty soon, that it wouldn't surprise me if he puts over a few guys on his way out.
I also heard that they wrestled 17 years ago in 2004 in Japan.
I know that Jericho wants a match with Suzuki as well. But then again, if I were a full-time pro wrestler, I'd probably want a match with Suzuki too.
Yeah, so I don't know if they're going to mention that history. Usually AEW announcers are pretty good about talking about that stuff. So speaking of AEW, this is not really a news item, but just something I thought I would throw out there. I did post it on Twitter. I don't know if either of you guys saw it, but I had posted a random wrestling thought of the day yesterday, and that is the original members of the Straight Edge Society are all within the confines of AEW now. CM Punk, Serena Deeb, and Luke Gallows by association with the Elite.
You know, I never noticed that until you mentioned it, and it's been that way for a while.
So it'll be interesting to see if they cross paths at all. Also, the same can be said for Adam Cole and Bobby Fish. It's interesting when former either tag members or stable members, you know, join up in a new promotion, but not together, whether or not they continue any of their history.
It'll be interesting if they go there. Isn't one of them's part of the Elite, right? One of the tag champs.
Yeah, Luke Gallows is tag team champs for Impact with Carl Anderson, but they hang out with the Elite in the background of all their, well, the majority of their appearances anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they were all Bullet Club in New Japan. So that's where that connection comes from.
Yeah. That'd be interesting way to have them interact, though, to have, you know, have that tease kind of happen. And, you know, is he going to stay with the Elite or is he going to go back to Straight Edge? That'd be kind of, might be neat to do.
I think it would be cool if they get to a point where it's CM Punk and Kenny Omega, whether it's for the title or not. But CM Punk versus Kenny Omega, the Elite are in the ring and do a beatdown of Punk, but for some reason, Luke Gallows is not participating. And then they build on that history, like not dissension in the Elite, but like, you know, like shoving him and be like, hey, what's the matter with you? And then, you know, he just like walks out or something. That would be intriguing.
One other thing, I don't know if you guys talked about this, but did you see the picture of Tony Khan from the Jaguars game where it supposedly leaked the card for Full Gear?
I just heard about that earlier today, yeah.
Now, well, if you look at the picture, I mean, maybe I'm thinking too deeply into this, but it definitely looks like Tony Khan knows that he's getting his picture taken. So it would not surprise me if he did that with the intention of it going viral, because some of the matches, like, I don't think it's a spoiler to say this, it says Britt Baker versus question mark. I mean, when you have your booking plans that are only for you, that most people aren't going to see, would you really put a question mark? That's my own thought. That's my own independent thought when I see that. But at the same time, if he knows he's being pictured, he might be doing that to throw, because he figured, well, somebody's going to blow this up and look closely at that sheet of paper and see that it's, they're all AEW names on it. So I'm not going to go down the matches here because I don't want to spoil it for any listeners, but it's out there. You know, the list is very easy to find.
And who's to say that's the actual booking sheet? I mean, he could have been bored at a Jaguars game because they haven't won a game yet. So it's very easy to get bored. Also, you're at a football game. You don't think there's going to be hundreds of cameras around and nobody's going to get a picture of you?
Exactly, yeah.
All right, well, we're in that kind of weird spot where there's not a pay-per-view to talk about for WWE or AEW.
Well, there is.
You can pay homage to your tribal chief next week.
Oh, wait. He's your tribal chief, too. Just remember that.
I know, but again, things don't count in that country. Go ask Bray Wyatt how that worked out for him. Twice. So, wrestling show, we're going to maybe change things up a little bit. Maybe we'll have some kind of trivia or something, or I'll come up with something, because we're going to be in a little bit of a lull until Survivor Series rolls around, and 2 weeks before that will be Full Gear. So we're maybe not going to do the same old show, and I'll have something better prepared than just news bullets, and we'll make it a fun listen. So until then, thank you once again for listening, downloading, and subscribing, and we will talk to you next time.
Thank you for listening to this episode. You can subscribe to the Wrestling Brethren podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Pandora, or wherever you get your podcast fix to hear the latest discussion from the Wrestling Brethren. You can visit us at twbpodcast.com for posts and episodes. Visit the mothership, if you will, at behindthesquaredcircle.com, home of the Behind the Squared Circle podcast network. Let us know your thoughts, questions, and comments at Twitter at TWBPShow, on Facebook at facebook.com/behindthesquaredcircle, and on Instagram at The Wrestling Brethren. You can follow Jarrett on Twitter at JarrettAubrey5150, and you can follow Josh at SouthpawJosh. Thank you again for listening, and we will talk to you again soon with more from The Wrestling Brethren.